Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minig.
Again, I just want to thank everyone for being on the show today. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I really hope you liked my new intro. I just figure I spice things up a bit. So to get things started, I will be interviewing John Cordray today. John is a licensed mental health therapist and the host of the Mental Health Today show. We will be getting into topics of social media and how it plays a role in mental health professionals' careers. We will also get into topics of mental health advocacy and different ways we can help the field of mental health. So without further ado, let's get started. Well, again, John, thank you so much for being on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Well, Jacob, I'm really glad to be on here. I'm always excited to come and share a little bit about what I do. And to my audience too, because I have a podcast as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's really good. I enjoy coming on to shows, and I'm enjoying coming on to getting to know you a little bit better too.
Absolutely. And again, just going over your LinkedIn and your websites, I love the content that you preach. It's inspiring. And I just know this episode's going to be beneficial for myself, my listeners, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Let's do this.
So just to start off, man, what originally got you into the field in the first place? Did an event motivate you somehow, or?
Yeah, I would say a series of events, I would say. I did not start out to be a therapist. It wasn't something I wanted to do. I wasn't in high school thinking, oh, one day I'm going to be a therapist. Yep. It just didn't happen. Wasn't even thinking about it. So it was a series of events, and it was a journey. And my original intent, when I went to undergrad, went to college, I wanted to be the next David Letterman of all things. Mm-hmm. I went to the same college that he went to. I went to took the same degree that he obtained. And so I love media. I love radio and TV. So I was going to pursue radio and TV production, which is what my undergrad is in radio and TV production. But then after I graduate, I got involved, did a lot of youth work and working with a lot of teenagers. And I really still love working with teenagers and children. And they would come to me with some pretty heavy things. And I really didn't know what to say or how to handle those things. And it wasn't just one or two times. It was constant. And they would come to me and talk about being abused or abusing someone else. And I mean, it was really burdening to me. And I'm glad that they came to me and felt like they could come to me, but I didn't know. I didn't feel qualified. And so the more students came to me, the more unqualified I knew I was. And so yeah. I thought, well, what if I became a therapist? A lot of people said that I was a good listener and had some wisdom. So I went down that route and I went to school and got my master's in professional counseling. And then in 2007, I got fully licensed and actually started a private practice. And so that's kind of how I got started being a therapist.
That's actually what I'm trying to do right now. I'm a little bit over halfway when it comes to being licensed.
Yeah. So it's a journey. That the whole licensing is a journey as well. And a lot of people don't realize that. The amount of time that you spend in grad school studying. In my case, I had a little family, young family, working full time, went to college or get my grad school in the evening. Got home, everybody was asleep, and then got up and did it again.
I'm not gonna lie, man. Is there a part of you that kind of misses the grind a little bit? You know, a little camaraderie with your fellow students and
the camaraderie. Yes, that is something that is not taught in grad school. When you become a therapist, And you, let's say you work for private practice. So I went right into private practice for a number of years, and it was a lonely, it was a very lonely field, because you don't really want to come home and talk to your wife about your day, right? Or your spouse. And because you don't want to burden other people. But if there were other therapists around, they would get you, right? They wouldn't be as burdened. So yeah, it was tough and being lonely. And so that part I do miss. I do not miss the studying and writing papers and all that. But I did love the newness of it and learning a lot of things, which was a great journey. But I'm glad it's behind me. But I would definitely encourage any of your listeners, Jacob, that are on that path themselves, or maybe they're interested in becoming a therapist. Yes, it's hard work, but it's totally worth it.
Oh, absolutely. And you may think I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to this, but in my grad school, I was going full time, and we had these Saturday morning classes. I think it would be like every other weekend. We would have to get to class from like 7 a.m. to like 3 in the afternoon. But I can't believe it. Like, I miss it. I miss actually going to class and interacting with other people, regardless if it was so early in the morning. Just learning from other people's stories and how they got there and how they wanted to be in the field and so forth.
Yeah, there's definitely things I do miss. Look, it sounds like you did it in the morning. I did mine at night. So yeah. Working all day and then going that was rough. But you're right. Meeting new people and hearing from their background and what got them involved in pursuing mental health, becoming a therapist, was really quite interesting. But you know as well as I do, it doesn't stop there, right? You have to go through college, you get your master's degree, yay. But then that's not the end of your journey if you want to become licensed. And so you have to go through an internship and then apply and take a national test. And
don't get me started. Like, I have my own feelings regarding the whole licensure procedure. I won't get into that this episode, but I got some strong feelings towards that. But maybe a conversation for another day. But I'm really fascinated because once you became a therapist and you have your love for radio, right? You have all your experience in that. Did that inspire you to like combine the both in some sort of way?
Okay. Yep. Yeah. So it was in my private practice. So this was around 2015. I started to wonder and think to myself, because when I became a therapist, I thought, well, my love before my undergrad degree is useless, it's pointless. Right. So because I'm a therapist now, what am I going to use radio and TV production for? But then I started to wonder and think to myself, well, what if I were to use my knowledge with radio and TV and see if I can leverage the media with my love for mental health? So I love for radio and TV, my love for mental health, and how can I merge them together? And back in 2015, podcast really wasn't a huge thing. It was pretty relatively unknown to many people. And so I really did some research, and there are a few people that I started to listen to. And I called them my virtual mentors. They had no idea, right? I never talked to them, but I listened to them and I read their content and I figured out how to make my podcast. And so I launched my show in 2015, and then it's like, well, will anybody listen? Is anyone going to listen to this? And some therapist talking into a mic, and sure enough, they did. And the rest is history. I've been podcasting since then, and obviously there are some breaks here and there too, because it you know, Jacob, as well as I do, that running your own show and podcast, it's a lot of work on top of everything that you're trying to do in your life.
I had a mentor when I was starting this. He told me we were doing some consultation. He's like, yes, podcasting can be really fun, but I'm going to let you know right now, it is a lot of work.
It's a grind. And you have to love it. And you have to know why you're doing it. Yeah. And for me, my big why for my podcast, I want to help people. This is the whole, really, my why I became a therapist. I want to help people. And if I could use my knowledge as a therapist and get on a podcast, there might be people that will listen and might even get help. And over the years, I've actually had people reach out to me and tell me that they listened to a particular episode, and very humbling to get those. And I love getting those.
Do you have any awesome stories about that? Because I have some too, where people really show their appreciation for what I actually do. Because you could do something for so long, but again, if you don't reach anybody, you don't really know if you're helping or not, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I do have a good story. So I was doing podcasting. I got some feedback from that, people all over the world, which was pretty cool. But about a year after I launched my podcast, I wanted to see if live streaming would be a thing. So now we got the TV part, right? The video part. And I got involved in Periscope, which at the time, Twitter owned Periscope. It was mm-hmm. Twitter's live streaming app. Okay. And it's not available now, but Periscope was sunsetted a few years ago, I believe. But when I first started, just like when I first started my podcast, would people watch? Would they actually take time to watch me do live stream? And I would, so in my office between sessions, just like podcasting, I would set everything up and then tear it down and then have a session and yep. then I have a break and put everything up and record. but it was like that for Periscope too. And one day I was doing live streaming. I ended up doing about every day, Monday through Friday. And people started to really understand that I'm coming on at a certain time of the day. Mm-hmm. And there were times where I would have 2,500 to 1,500 people consecutively watching at the same time. And it floored me, and people all over the world. And one particular person, and I didn't know this at the time, in fact, she was in the UK, and she sent me a letter, and it was a handwritten letter. It was 6 pages front and back. And she gave me a painting, because she went to Africa that year. And on the streets of Africa, there were some children that made a painting. And I don't know if you can see it, but I actually have it right up here. Yeah. It's kind of small, but it's a constant reminder there that you never know who's listening. In the letter, she was saying how much she appreciated my podcast, my live stream on Periscope. And she said, "You don't know this, but I was going to kill myself. But then for some reason, I came on your show or on your live stream on Periscope. And you said something that completely changed my mind." And it blew me away that here was someone that was going to end her life, but for some reason she got on Periscope, and something that I said, it was life-changing, life-saving for her. I'll always remember that. I still have the letter. This was years ago. And that picture, that painting, will always be a good reminder of that.
Dude, that is so beautiful, man. I can't put into words what that must have felt like internally, the joy and love.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I can't imagine.
And it just solidified, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, when it gets hard, when it gets rough, you got to have your whys, because you can really, as a therapist, whether you're in private practice or working for a company, or when you're doing something on the side, like a podcast yeah. or YouTube or some kind of content creation, it's hard work and it can be draining. And so it's important to have those whys. This is why I do what I do. And you said you have right. them as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I listen to other podcasts about developing a podcast, this and that. And that's what they always tell you, is your number one priority can't be to make money. Because if it is, you're going to burn out really fast in this industry.
That's exactly right.
You know?
Yep. And that's why I believe why so many podcasts, they don't last very long.
Yeah.
because there's I understand the excitement. Oh, I'm going to do this. This is going to be my side hustle. I'm going to make a lot of money in 2 months. And the expectation's just too high. And then 2 months comes rolling around, and then it's like, oh my gosh, this is a lot of work and I'm not getting any money.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of made that mistake a little bit where, yes, my first priority was helping people, but I had a very close second priority as in, no, this would be a cool like side hustle. If I can make maybe 100 a week, 200 every 2 weeks, whatever, I'd be happy. Well, needless to say, that even in itself was a high expectation because it takes so much work to even get that from sponsors, selling clothes, like things like clothes and advertising.
You're exactly right. And by the time that you're able to get there, you need a team to help you. And because you'll burn out, but it's so important. And I think, I didn't have a mentor. It sounded like you did starting out with podcasting. But that is something I think is so important. If there are other therapists and healthcare providers that are thinking about, creating a podcast or maybe a YouTube channel, definitely do it. Definitely do it, because even if you have one listener or one view, you don't know who that person is. And you're right, you don't want to start out by trying to make money. Eventually you need it to have some sustainability, right? It's expensive to have a podcast. Let's just say it, right? You have to have good equipment. You have to have a hosting plant. Yeah, nice mic. So it takes money to do it. So just being able to break even can be difficult, but not impossible. Mm-hmm. So find my biggest recommendation, if you are thinking about starting a podcast, find somebody that can come alongside you and mentor you, or at least join a cohort of other like-minded and learn from each other. And don't do this alone. It's a lonely place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And one thing the one mentor told me too is just to keep my hopes up. He's like, yes, there's millions of podcasts, but just know that a lot of people give up really easily. I think some podcaster said something about like the average podcaster quits after seven episodes.
I think that's probably about right. 7-10 episodes. Because it is so hard, and they get excited. So I get it. I've been there. Get excited. So, oh yeah, maybe this episode is going to bring in a lot of people. And they spend hours editing and getting everything just right. And maybe they don't get the views that they're hoping for yet.
There it is.
Yet. Yeah.
I mean, I understand one point, because if you work your ass off, because you put in a lot of time and effort, you would like to see a decent amount of downloads because you want to know if your hard work is paying off. I understand that mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you want a certain number of downloads and you don't come close to it, it can be disheartening. But the biggest thing is don't take it personal, because people don't know you yet. When I started with Periscope and when I was doing live streams, when I first started, there was nobody there.
Yeah.
Nobody showed up. And yet I decided to do a show, like get on live stream and talk as if there were people showing up. And what happened is later on, people did start the show. I watched the replay, followed me. And then I was able to, I mean, I had over 20,000 people following me on Periscope. Insane. I was later invited to speak at the Periscope Summit in San Francisco. And then I went on a few months after that and went and spoke at South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. So you don't know what you don't know. And when you give up, we can have a therapist, right? Yeah. As therapists, we know that we have to focus on what we know to be true, not catastrophize.
Yes. Right?
And so with anything where you're growing something, and it's not going to grow overnight. You have to water it. You have to cultivate it. You have to weed it. And that takes work. That's not the fun stuff. the fun stuff is looking at the analytics and the downloads and yay.
Yeah.
But everything up to that point, it's not all fun and games because it's a lot of work.
And again, you have to dig deep within your heart to know why are you doing this? Like you mentioned earlier, there could be people like I'm dealing with anxiety, depression. I click on YouTube ways to like mitigate my depression or whatnot. And they find you, you know, and you can save someone's life.
Yeah. Yeah. And you never know what you'll say that will maybe not even just save their life, but maybe give them a whole new perspective on life. You know, and because I would love to see so many different healthcare providers have a podcast, let's say, right? Or YouTube, because that we all know we're in a mental health crisis. And there is a national shortage of therapists. And I'm not saying, I'm not advocating that because I'm a therapist, I have a podcast and therefore that's therapy. No, not at all. Mm-hmm. So it's not therapy, but it's bringing the education of what we know as professionals to help people who are struggling. And if a person cannot get in to see a therapist, or maybe they refuse to see one, maybe they have too much anxiety, but they are willing to listen to a therapist talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is amazing, right? So we need more healthcare professionals. We need more doctors and therapists and social workers. We need it. We're not competing with each other. We are colleagues joining forces. So if you have 50 listens on downloads on your podcast and I have 50 on mine, that's 100 people we just reached. Right. So with that mentality, we're not doing this solo. We're doing it together as a community to be able to share our knowledge that we have to help people around the world. Mm-hmm. Because your audience may not be the same as my audience. And so we're diversifying. Yes. And that's what we want.
And that's going to help create growth among the country, the world, and how we, again, view healthcare and mental health.
Exactly. And so that's a broader view, kind of the big why. It's like, that's a pretty amazing, but you do want to, you want to think macro in that way rather than macro of I'm going to be rich. Right. So it's a mindset. So you might make money doing your podcast, very possible, stick with it. You probably will, but you shouldn't, that shouldn't be your sole reason for getting out there and making content.
Yes, for like a secondary or third priority, be like, oh, it'd be nice. Okay. It's not going to kill me if I don't make money. So,
right. And then you might later on, you might decide, you know, well, I'm going to put some more effort into it and learn how to do this. Going right back to what I was saying about a mentor or a coach to help you with this, that then you can make a lot of strides if you were able to do that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think what really bothers me though is that I'll listen to some podcasters that I even do respect, but then they'll say things like recently one said, you know, if you don't do my program, you're not going to do as well. And he's talking about like, man, if you're not getting 300 downloads an episode, you're not really doing anything. You're not really getting out to the world. I know you think like something like hundreds a lot, but it's really not. And it's like, really, dude? And you're talking to like a person or a lot of people who are just starting. So what are you saying? They should all have on average 250, 300 downloads every episode? No, like not me, nowhere even close to that.
Well, and I think that that's kind of inflating a little bit and puffing them themselves up.
Yeah.
Look at me. I've got over 300 downloads an episode, right? So that's not helpful for anybody. And if the one thing that I mean, really, it's kind of what I tell my clients, right? So when I have a client that's struggling with anxiety, and let's say it's social phobia, and they, before they came to see me, they didn't do anything, they didn't go out, or very rarely did they go out to the grocery store, or they hate talking on the phone or public speaking. Right. So their social anxiety has influenced their behavior to the point where their life is really not much of a life. And so what I would tell them, and I tell my clients, try to think about each day being and doing 1% more than you did yesterday. Don't worry about the 5%, not yet. Work on the 1%. Mm-hmm. And as you each day work on 1% better than yesterday, those 1% add up.
They do.
And so that's the proper mental mindset when it comes to podcasting or creating content. What can you do is 1% better than yesterday? And that might not be, that might not translate into downloads. It might be how you present yourself on the mic, mm-hmm. or it might be editing skill. It might be people that you reach out to and to get on your show. So it is not all about the downloads. Yes, we want to reach people, going back to our why, but that shouldn't be the sole reason. And also it shouldn't be the sole reason why you quit.
Amen. Amen to that. Yeah. You have to look at other avenues for success. Like, oh, I learned something new about podcasting, or I learned something new about myself.
That's right. Exactly. So none of us got to where we are now in one day or 2 months. Or 3 months.
Oh, got it. But it'd be so nice if we did, though, right? So quick and easy.
Yes. There's no easy button. It's not. So, I think what you bring up is realistic, and that's the danger of listening to certain people on social media that appear to be successful. Mm-hmm. If they brag about their views or downloads, to me, that's a red flag.
Absolutely.
And because you don't know if they're true or not.
Or how they got them.
Yeah. Or how they got them. That's right.
Yep. Well, I would love to, again, learn a little bit more about you and what you do, because I know you have the virtual therapist. What mm-hmm. is the virtual therapist?
Well, I've got several things going on right now. So the virtual therapist, I launched that in June 1st was the first edition.
Okay.
And it was on LinkedIn, and I'm pretty active on LinkedIn.
Yep.
And I'm a content creator on LinkedIn. And with LinkedIn, they give you a content creator's ability to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to start a newsletter on LinkedIn. So it's a LinkedIn newsletter. And so it's a pretty cool feature where I decided, I wonder if people would be interested in talking about virtual therapy. And so I decided to name it Virtual Therapist. And so everything in the newsletter, it's a real short newsletter, but it has everything to do with mental health tech. And sure enough, people really started to subscribe to it, and they read it, and it's really has taken off. And now I have other therapists who are contributing for the virtual therapist.
Well, again, I can imagine that being so beneficial too, especially when it comes to like telemedicine, COVID, people are still kind of worried about going out and about, and it's just another way of access.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people don't realize how many mental health tech companies are out there right now.
Yeah.
Since the last couple of years, there's tons.
Yep.
And so I try to sort through that and look at which ones are the more have more a little bit more integrity than others, because I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of unethical companies that are out there that are doing some unethical things, and we're seeing the results of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, there was this one, I can't think of the name of it, BetterHelp or something, that got into some trouble. But Yeah,
I don't like to, I'm not going to name any companies necessarily. Happy to talk individually, but I mean, truth is, we don't know the full story.
True.
But there definitely has been several mental health companies getting some bad reps, and being investigated by the DOJ, which is always a bad thing.
But also to look at it in a different way, do you think it's just a new avenue that we're all trying to get used to? Even they are, they're developing this new thing, and maybe they just made some mistakes.
Yes, Yes, I think there are some mental health companies that their biggest mistake is that they don't have a clinician on their leadership team. And if that's the case, then what happens, going right back to where we were talking about earlier, it's all about the money and the focus on money and not the people you're there to help, right? So if your why is not to help people, you shouldn't be in the business.
Yes.
If your number one why is, I want to make a profit, you should not be in the helping business.
I am such a huge advocate of that, especially not to change subjects, but like treatment center owners are business owners of mental health facilities where they'll throw like 16 clients on a counselor's caseload. And if you really look at the insurance numbers, and again, insurance is a whole nother issue, but like they make a lot of money for a client, a bed, to have them stay a week or a month. It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money that they're making, but the clinician is not.
Yep.
So I think that is a part of the contribution to the national decline of mental health professionals. Because if a mental health professional, not all mental health professionals are getting paid poorly, but a vast majority of them are. You can make a lot of good money, a good living as a therapist in private practice. I was in private practice, I know. But there are some that are not making a good living. And when you look at what is the insurance companies, what is their cut? What is the companies themselves cut? And then what is the cut for the professional? And it's the professional that's going to take the biggest cut of all. So it's hard to make a living in some places.
The struggle is real, my friend. It is. It is.
Yeah. And sometimes, though, I'll say that people in our profession kind of go the opposite way, right? So their why is too big. And, well, I'm doing this because I'm helping people, so therefore I'm going to suffer and not make as much money, right? So there's got to be a balance there. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to go the opposite end of the spectrum where I'm a therapist. I shouldn't be making a lot of money.
We're not in it for the money, right?
Right.
That grinds my gears.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some truth to that. We just talked about that, right? Our big why needs to be helping people, but it also has to be about making a living.
Yes.
And if we're not making a living, then we're going to be stressed and burnt out, and we're going to leave the profession. And I think that's what we're seeing.
And it scares me about the future therapists in our world today. Like, what's going to happen to them in 10, 20 years coming up in the field?
Well, you're right. And that's what we as those of us who are seasoned therapists need to stand up and look at that down. We need to project into the future and say, what can we do now to prevent that? We have to come together as a community. I've been a licensed therapist for a lot of years, and I know there's a lot of other therapists that have been too. We cannot keep our head in the sand and just do our thing and go home. We've got to look at our profession, and we need to mentor the young professionals. We need to help them and provide an opportunity in a community and a network that they can feel supported by other professionals in the field. And so that I think that is one of the answers that we need to come together, and we need to do our part to help mentor these young up-and-coming mental health professionals.
And again, that's what I really put my heart and soul into, because I hate, and me going through my licensure right now, I'm just going to get into it quickly. I think it's just BS how they make you do so many years to get licensure because they think it'll make you a better therapist. Strongly disagree. Do I agree on some supervision? Absolutely. But it's a money thing. It's a money grab. And I'll leave it at that. But I hate the mentality of, let's say, older therapists like, well, if I did 2-3 years of licensure, you need to do it, whatever. It's like, no, I don't want for the future generation. I don't want that. No. I want to help them.
Yeah.
I want to help them. That's not helping them.
Well, we have to, the one thing that we can do is look at what's broken. And there's a lot of broken, there's a lot of broken people, but there's a lot of broken system. And one of that, we're starting to see it slowly with some license, the credentialing, where I have 3 licenses in 3 states, and I have to go through the exact same red tape to get a license in every state. I'm an LPC, a licensed professional counselor. And now we're starting to see the counseling compact for LPCs, where states are actually saying, hey, this is kind of silly. We're online now. We're doing telehealth. So we need to band together as states and say, it's okay if you live in, I'm in Missouri, but if Missouri is partnering and doing this compact with Tennessee, then guess what? It cuts down all of the red tape of getting a license for Tennessee, because I went through it for Missouri. Yes. So it doesn't make sense. I have to do the same thing, the exact same thing in every other state. Yep. This doesn't make sense. And we're starting to see that it's a slow increase that in our profession. It just, technology was not something that we were taught. And so it's going to come slowly, but mm-hmm. it's coming. I do have a real positive outlook, but we have to band together mm-hmm. and not keep our heads in the sand and build a community. And that's really what I'm trying to build too. Is a community. And my desire, I've been on using social media for good for a long time, but it only can do so much. And this past summer, I was kind of dreaming and wondering, what if we could create an ecosystem where it's not necessarily social media, because social media is not, one, it's not all positive. And two, it depends on the algorithm. So I've got a large LinkedIn group. I've got a Facebook group, but when I post in there, not everybody sees it. And so I was wondering, well, what if we created a whole new platform for mental health therapists, mental health advocates, and people who are looking for help? And so I created this community. It's called the Mental Health Community. And I am looking for, right now, I'm looking for beta members. And I opened the door for beta members because it's not officially launched yet. And opened about for beta members, for professionals. So I have about 115 right now in there since Friday, just a few days ago. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I think many mental health professionals, they resonate with. And it doesn't matter where you work. It doesn't matter if you're in private practice. It doesn't matter if you're in a different company. It doesn't matter if you're a student. It doesn't matter if you're an advocate and you're not a therapist at all, but you are an advocate for mental health. Come together. Let's come together and network and communicate inside this community. And it's really been pretty amazing to be able to see what is in there. I'm creating a job site. So if you want to find a job in mental health, I'm developing a special relationship with mental health tech companies. They're inside there. And so I'm matching. I'm doing the vetting part and I'm introducing, making a personal connection. I'm for my podcast, I have a whole podcast community that's opened up as well for healthcare providers to be a part of. So I'm trying to really build this ecosystem to where it's very similar to like Facebook or mm-hmm. LinkedIn or even Slack, if you're used to doing that. But it's a lot, in my opinion, a lot better because you don't have to depend on the algorithms. Yeah. You don't have to worry about trolls or mean people, right? You don't have to worry about terrible news that you get mm-hmm. on there. It's all about network and connection.
Well, John, that's a lot of great stuff, man. That is so cool. And again, to all my listeners, I'll put those links on my show notes so everyone will have access to that. Great. So, John, as we wind things down, and again, it's been a blast having you on, man. It really has. What are your, I guess, future goals and projects, I guess, in the next 5-10 years? You know, what do you hope to accomplish?
5 or 10 years. I don't know what's 5 or months. I view what I'm doing now as a starting point, right? Yeah. So I try to practice what I preach. So the 1%. So what am I doing today that's 1% better than yesterday? Awesome. And I try to do that with my clients. I try to do that with my side business. With all the projects, my podcast, and just as a person, as a dad, as a husband. And I think that has done me well. And projecting out 5 or 10 years from now, it's hard to know. But I would hope that I would have the ability to have a very large community inside the mental health community. And it grows into a living organism, right? So natural things going on in there where people are getting help. I mean, imagine if you were starting out on a podcast as a therapist, or maybe you wanted to do YouTube. Well, instead of going to YouTube or instead of going somewhere else for a podcast, what if you could do it inside this mental health community and the entire audience are actually looking for the content?
Yes.
That'd be amazing. So that's kind of what I'm envisioning 5 years or so. Who knows where that can go? But I really want to be a leader, a thought leader in the mental health field, and to help build up and raise the next generation of therapists.
That's awesome. That's something, again, I feel very passionately about, man. And I want to be a part of that community. I really do.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll send you a link.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, John, this has been an amazing show. Thank you so much for being here with me and my listeners. And if my listeners do want to get a hold of you, is there a particular email they could use to make contact with you?
Sure. Yeah. So you can find me everywhere on social media. I'm definitely on LinkedIn mostly right now. So you just type in my name there. But if you want to email me, sure, go right ahead. It's john@johncordray.com. Pretty easy.
Excellent. Excellent. I'll make sure I put that information on my show notes so everyone has access to that.
All right. And very good.
Yeah, it's been a great pleasure, John. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jacob. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been a pleasure. And I want to just encourage you to continue what you're doing with your show. Keep plugging away. I know it gets hard, but it's worth it in the long run.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You bet.
I just want to thank John for being an awesome and amazing BHI guest. The show was an absolute blast. And I just want to thank all my listeners for supporting me, especially through my 50th episode, which will be the end of season one. And I'm very excited to be looking forward to season two. And with that being said, all the content expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, seek the care of a licensed medical doctor or a licensed therapist. So until next time, have a great day. Bye.